Wow. Well, that was the beginning of a jazz standard. It's called Tanya. And it was really the beginning of the modern jazz era as well. One of the finest examples of jazz of the early 60s, recorded on June the 2nd, 1964, in Paris. It was composed by Donald Byrd and interpreted by Dexter Gordon on tenor sax, Donald Byrd on trumpet, Kenny Drew on piano, Niels Henning Pedersen on bass, and Art Taylor on drums. This is from Dexter Gordon's album, One Flight Up. This is Lead Stories. I'm Nutrice Lead. And we're taking a look at a case that we've discussed several times, but from different angles. And today we are going to go back to the most important angle in order to understand this thing that we call criminal justice. Gwen Carr, the mother of Eric Garner, is still waiting, still holding on to the hope that the Justice Department will bring to account Daniel Pantaleo, the NYPD officer, as you know, who put her 43-year-old son, Eric Garner, in an illegal chokehold on July the 7th, 2014, that killed him. The New York Times reported last week that some federal prosecutors within the Justice Department had recommended prosecution of Pantaleo on federal civil rights charges, but that others were uncertain whether such charges would actually yield a conviction on any counts. The Garner case, which has been a frequent topic on Lead Stories, as you know, deserves a much closer look, this time discussing the intricacies of how justice is actually railroaded by systems that publicly proclaim that, in fact, they are ruggedly in pursuit of justice, but it's not necessarily the case. And why we want to look at this case? Because it's got all of the elements of injustice that we routinely see, and we've been seeing this in many, many cases over the years. We've been hearing the same kind of pratings from the Justice Department and from the governor's office and from the state prosecutor. And at the same time, there is no justice. There's no justice. And we've become accustomed to the idea that justice is some kind of monetary settlement. The offending police department as a whole, or the city in behalf of the police department, comes to terms with the grieving family. And here in this Garner case, as you know, it happened here too. The family came to terms with the city, and they settled for almost 4 million. It was about $3.9 million, and that was supposed to be the end of it, but they came to a settlement. I have to remind you what a settlement is, what it means when the family settles. The first order of business usually is to guide the family exactly in that direction. They will pronounce immediately after the death of a person by, at the hands of police, how tragic it is and how they are looking into this and they're studying it to find ways to improve policing. And all along the way, this is for this, the, this instruction is for us, the people. All right. All of this is done to placate the people so that, and to divert attention. The fact is very simple and very straightforward. It's not that complicated. We have a situation in which an arm of government, that's the police department, represented by an officer or several officers, took the lives or lives of individuals. And these cases are most highly contentious in African American and Latino communities, because that has been the axiom, it seems. White police officers committing very serious crimes, life-threatening crimes, and life-taking crimes against African American and Latino, mostly men. I have covered cases, of course, where it also included women, as in the case of Eleanor Bumpers, a grandmother who was said to be late on her rent, and a SWAT team showed up at her house, a SWAT team, to evict her. And neighbors reported how they dealt with it, including the cops who initially were sent to effect this eviction. As it turned out, in the final analysis, she was not late on her rent. It was the Department of Housing Preservation and Development. She was a woman receiving rent subsidies, and the department did not process her payment in time, but it showed up as her, she herself personally being at fault for not paying her rent. But I don't know any place in the city of New York and beyond where late payment for rent, and it was only a matter of a week or so, should have afforded the dispatch of a SWAT team. And they had a doctor who himself needed a psychiatrist, but he was a psychiatrist, who claimed that he diagnosed her from the hallway through the door. She had never been a patient of his or anything like that, but they sent him there. And for legal purposes, agreed that Eleanor Bumpers was a threat to herself and to others. And based on that determination, that so-called professional finding, a SWAT team was dispatched. And next thing you know, Mrs. Bumpers ended up with a gaping hole in her chest. She was dragged out of her apartment, down the hall, shoved into a car, a squad car, and taken to the hospital, because by then, people in the housing project had begun to protest. The word had gotten around. I had been to the apartment myself, and it was unbelievable. A small space with bullet holes all over the place. She was shot with a shotgun and it sprayed bullets all over. There was no way she could have survived that wound. But I digressed there for a minute. What I did by doing that was just to begin to acclimate you into this idea that these attacks by police on citizens, for whatever reason that they come up with, are nothing new. And they found elaborate ways to deal with them and to quote, defend themselves. So now they have a problem when a citizen is killed under highly contentious circumstances. How do you handle, quote, the public relations of it? This is of great concern to the police department. How do you handle the public relations of it? Because it potentially can give a very distorted, you see, a very distorted opinion about how the police department behaves in black communities as opposed to white communities. They police white communities, but they are law enforcement in black and Latino communities, two entirely different dispositions. Now, just to make another note, while the mother of Eric Garner is seeking some kind of redress, as I noted before, the family settled with the city. And what does this mean? You can't settle, or you won't be able to settle. You won't get any money out of a settlement unless you agree to hold the city harmless for any action it has committed via its police officers. So that's the first thing you have to agree to. The very people who killed her son, she would have to agree to limit any action against them. And she would, in effect, will have to pretend that they did not kill her son. They'll move on to other technical issues, but not the central question, which is, her son was murdered by the members of the New York Police Department. I'm coming to point two related to this in a minute. But I am reminding you that one of the major terms of settlement anywhere in the United States involving families of people brutally or illegally killed by police officers is that the family has to hold the city harmless for the very thing that is upsetting them even now, and that is the what they believe to be the illegal use of force against their loved one. So that presents a little problem. Eric Garner was killed in 2014, shortly after, in another part of the country, in Ferguson, Missouri, we had a police officer gunning down Michael Brown, an 18-year-old looking forward to college, in very contentious circumstances. But there too, we saw a settlement. And the family had to agree not to move against the city on the matter of his murder. coming back now to Eric Garner. So that's the first and most important thing to keep in mind when you're talking about settlements. It took 4 years. 4 years in order to arrive at that point of non-litigation against the police department. Now, I have discussed in great detail the difficulty that I have. This is me personally, it doesn't have to be interpreted as an across-the-board complaint. In my view, settlement under those terms is itself a miscarriage of justice because it does not get at the root cause of the matter. The state essentially depriving a citizen of his life by acts of murder would be considered murder. When the case is settled, that is expunged. You can't now say that the state or agents of the state murdered the citizen because none other than the family would agree. They have to agree to hold the city and the police department and the police officers themselves harmless. You didn't do this. It didn't happen. Now let's talk about the money and we'll all leave the table satisfied. So it's very interesting that now, 4 years after Gwen Carr, the mother of Eric Garner, believes that she can proceed with an action against the city department of police on the matter of the death of her son. What did we see on the videotape? By the way, isn't it ironic? The officer, Daniel Pantaleo, is still at work. He got a nice fat raise. He's still earning his pension, and life goes on. The person who filmed his actions is in jail. I'll get to that. Let's talk about this specific situation that happened and how in the aftermath, even 4 years later, there's still a deliberate effort to miscast this crime. Daniel Pantaleo was not the only police officer who confronted Eric Garner on that day. He was by far the most aggressive, but he was not the only one. According to the videotape, and it showed it as clear as day, Eric Garner, who was supposedly selling loose cigarettes, this was his crime. This was the crime for which the members, the good members, the all-white team of the New York Police Department in Staten Island near the ferry chose to confront him and to threaten arrest. He was selling loose cigarettes, and the same phrase keeps turning up all the time. He was selling untaxed cigarettes. This goes all the way back to the 1920s. And we see clearly that Pantaleo takes the lead. Eric Garner was a pretty stout man and a tall man. So literally, Daniel Pantaleo had to kind of climb up on him from the back, put his arm around Garner's neck, and squeeze hard in order to choke him, to choke off his air supply, which is a maneuver. That's what a chokehold is. And that would bring him down. His partners in crime, the other members of the police department who were there, were aiding and abetting Pantaleo in bringing Eric Garner down. At the moment Pantaleo engaged in this activity, he knew, and the other officers knew, that what he was doing was totally illegal and against department guidelines. The department had banned chokeholds for this very reason, that officers had used it in order to kill people. But now they're saying, well, it was to bring him down, because Eric Garner was a big guy, and Pantaleo, which was really the odd thing, of the other police officers, there were at least five or six, Pantaleo was actually the smallest in stature. He literally, as I said, he had to get Eric Garner from the back, came up behind him, almost like he had to climb up on him, and then apply this chokehold, which systematically cut off the air supply of Eric Garner. And that's why his last words were, "I can't breathe." And then he goes down. This is all happening on the tape. You see it clearly. You don't need a commission to interpret what you're seeing. You're seeing what you're seeing. So at that very point, we have several officers, in my view, committing a murder, using a maneuver that had been banned by the New York Police Department and police departments across the country because it was a lethal maneuver. And in this situation, it produced the result they were looking for. Because Eric Garner resisted arrest, he deserved to die. And they killed him in broad daylight. The department immediately talked about this as, well, you know, a confrontation. There's no confrontation. A bunch of police officers set upon an individual. He was fighting literally in his own defense, Eric Garner. And Pantaleo led the attack against a citizen with a maneuver outlawed years before by the police department because it was known to be a lethal maneuver and would likely produce death in the individual against whom this maneuver was applied. So right there, we have several people implicated in Garner's death. We don't hear about them. We do not hear about the police officers assisting Daniel Pantaleo. They narrowed it down to just one police officer. He was just trying to do his job. Here's this unruly citizen selling loose cigarettes. You can't have that. This is a major breach of law and order. He's got to pay the price. He's got to obey this cop who is by far the smallest member of the pack, but the most zealous. So we have a picture of how this incident has actually grown, but not, they're not telling the public this, and they're not considering this for legal reasons, that it isn't just Pantaleo. It is every single police officer who did nothing to save Eric Garner's life when he was under direct assault by one of their pack. Okay. So Eric Garner is passed out. He's not moving. He's not responding to stimuli. It looks like he has just gone out. Ambulance people, a medical corps shows up, and one wonders why. Why did they show up? They did nothing really to intervene in what clearly was a medical emergency. They just loaded this man up on a gurney, and then they were waiting. Now, everybody here is white. Everybody here is white. This is Staten Island. Okay. And you do not see a frantic effort being made by the medical personnel showing up, responding to what they can clearly see is a major medical emergency. They treated this as, well, we see this kind of thing all the time. And they were more concerned about whether the police, any of the police officers were harmed or were in need of medical treatment, because obviously they would do a triage if the police officers or any of them needed help. They would come first. They would come ahead of Eric Garner. So now what do we have? What do we have? What are we looking at? This is not a simple case anymore of, a brash cop trying to make his mark. This, from our perspective, the perspective of the people, anybody talking justice here, we should understand the case very differently. This is a case of a pack rat of cops who brutally attacked a black man in broad daylight, choked off his air supply using an illegal maneuver. They know exactly what that maneuver does, which is why he used it. No police officer discouraged the use of that maneuver. When Eric Garner is literally at death's door, the medical personnel responding do not act like they are responding to a medical emergency. It's just another black guy. We load him up on the gurney, and you see on the tape itself, you see how disinterested the medical technicians were. They didn't really even pay attention. Some basic things that you would expect a medical technician to do, to just even ascertain whether the man is alive. they didn't do. So from the very beginning, right there on the sidewalk, we had a major crime occurring before our very eyes. And it had nothing to do with justice. So we also had evidence that it involved more than Daniel Pantaleo. We had a whole bunch of people similarly responsible for the death of Eric Garner. Instead, they framed this case as if it was one police officer, Pantaleo. He's the guy. It was a one-on-one encounter. No, from the very beginning, the case was railroaded because it did not accurately reflect what went on there on the street and who was responsible ultimately for the death of Eric Garner. I'm walking you through this now so you can understand how before your very eyes, they're telling you you didn't see what you saw. The question, according to the New York Police Department, was about the interaction between Daniel Pantaleo and Eric Garner. And it was Eric Garner, because he was so big, because he was so hard to contain and control. Eric Garner forced Daniel Pantaleo to use extreme methods to try and contain him and bring him down to the ground so they could effect an arrest. This is the rationale they're telling us. They're giving us this rationale. And it is amazing to me that the lawyers for the family went along with this argument. So we have the death of an individual, the penalty for selling loose cigarettes has never been public execution, except Daniel Pantaleo on his own decided this was what was merited. And he got away with it. Was there a departmental hearing at least? Yes, they said we had a departmental hearing because, after all, we are the police department. We follow rules. We don't know what happened in that police department, the departmental hearing, if in fact there was one. But what we do know is that it did not produce any punishment for this errant officer who, in the face of very clear guidance and guidelines about the use of this illegal maneuver, did in fact use the chokehold. There you are. The lawyers come in representing the family. And the first clue that something was wrong was there was no immediate petition. Similarly, the same case as in Ferguson, Missouri, with Michael Brown. Nobody made an application for a special prosecutor to be appointed immediately. I asked for the papers, didn't get any. That would have been an indication that you're serious about justice. The appointment of a special prosecutor, the law-abiding and law-loving governor didn't see a need for one. the law-abiding and law-loving state attorney general didn't see a need for one. The advisors of the family didn't see a need for one. And they began to realize that people were watching. And then we heard from time to time a call, a very weak call, directed at whom we don't know, but a weak call for a special prosecutor. And that is to shape the public's mind that they had justice on their mind. They didn't have justice on their mind. Because there's only one way you get a special prosecutor. You do not say, pretty, 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 please, can we have a special prosecutor? That's not how it's done. That is a legal fight. And you see evidence of it in court papers challenging the top law enforcement officer of the state and the governor who is supposed to be involved in this process. The governor who got there based on the black vote in large measure. But they gave the governor a way out. They did the same thing in Ferguson. They gave these people a way out. One hand washes the other. We're not going to embarrass you by jamming you up and making it imperative that you confront this question of a case that was so out of hand, where so many illegal things were going on in public. I mean, straight out there. And you are not, as governor, directing the state attorney general to appoint a special prosecutor here. And now comes the other sleight of hand. Now they're talking with the Justice Department and whether the Justice Department will proceed with some kind of investigation. Well, you're way too late. You're too late. And you're too insufficient. Your job was to insist from the very beginning. You're not interested in settling this matter. This requires a full-blown investigation. Why? Because it suggests that you have renegade cops who, despite the directives of the supposed police commissioner, and the reason that this came up at all was that the maneuver called the chokehold was a popular way of killing off people all over the country. People dying mysteriously in encounters with the police. There's nothing mysterious about it. Everybody knew what the chokehold did. This is why police commissioners all across the country and people had to march about this issue of a chokehold because it had already killed off enough men of color in this country. I reported here on the day that Daniel Pantaleo was supposed to be brought down to police headquarters to be questioned in a closed hearing. Why is it a closed hearing? And since when does any police official have the right to determine innocence or guilt? The only thing that the police commissioner should be allowed to make a judgment on is whether it was used or not. The pathology, pathologist's report said, yes, this was a chokehold. And that's all it needed to be to bring this matter even further along in terms of demanding justice. And it was documented. It's on videotape. Suddenly, that's not good enough. So now the lawyers for the Garner family and the advisors for the Garner family suddenly see that the matter is to be as efficacious as possible. Solve this case quickly and let's get on with life. Eric Garner is already dead. There's nothing we can do. And in any event, we have no control over the criminal justice system. So now they throw another card. This one is supposed to kind of tie up the loose ends. You ask the federal government, the same federal government that could not guarantee Eric Garner's constitutional rights, they're now asking that the federal government address the question of whether Eric Garner's death was tantamount to an attack on his constitutional rights, the constitutional right being the right to life. Remember, I told you? White people have natural rights. People of color have negotiated rights, constitutional rights. Nobody black that I know has the same rights or the presumed same rights as whites do. Daniel Pantaleo has natural rights, which is why he still has a job that is paying him more than half more than he was earning just 4 years ago. He has not served a day in prison. He hasn't lost a single benefit. Neither he nor his cohorts, who acted like a pack of thugs. Nobody from the medical team is held responsible for being nonchalant about the medical emergency that they were witnessing. They just had him there on the gurney, Eric Garner. So we see how it all works. Now, all of the people involved were white, or at least, what people consider to be white in the United States. They all come out of a very closed society in Staten Island. From the police department's point of view, there is no way that some black man was going to cause a disruption of the process. Everything was going fine. How do you hold a departmental problem, a hearing, sorry, when the problem really is? This is murder. You don't have departmental hearings about murder. You have trials about murder. This case never came to trial. And this is with the advice and apparently with the consent of a whole long list of very capable people, civil rights leaders and experienced litigators. And they're asking the community people, well-meaning and supportive, come out, show your support. This is happening, or that is happening, and we need to see you out in the street, and people obey. People do what they consider to be their part in the quest for justice. This was just a kind of ruse. Like I said, we never saw an application being made, a direct confrontation with the governor, a direct confrontation with the state attorney general. And these are the people who are in office precisely because the so-called civil rights leaders went beating the bushes to bring souls to the polls to support them. That is from Mario Cuomo to his son, Andrew Cuomo, to anybody named Cuomo, to the state attorney general. They all follow the same formula. You hire the underlings to go out there, get the votes that put them in office, and then they kiss you goodbye. If you're lucky, you get a kiss. They just shut you down and shut you out. So what do we do? The first thing is to not be fooled. Justice has not been done in this case and in many, many other cases in the city and state of New York and around the country. We've had people promise all kinds of things. Amadou Diallo shot at more than 41 times. The then U.S. Attorney General did nothing. Eric Holder. And later on in Ferguson, Missouri, when it was engineered that the killer of Michael Brown and Officer Darren Wilson, it was none other than the U.S. Attorney General, again, Eric Holder, who said the standard for conviction was too high. And he didn't want to risk losing a case, which is utter and complete nonsense and an insult, really. When he said that the standard was too high to secure a conviction, what he was saying was that his mettle was too low. He couldn't see himself going up against the white system himself, although he had the power and authority to do it. Which brings me to the next criticism. There is a solution. There is a solution. But nobody would take it. The city of New York, the city council of New York, is the governing body of the city of New York, which is the same arrangement all over the country. They have the power and authority to fire the mayor if they wanted to fire the police commissioner, to demand open hearings on this question, just because nobody seems interested in wanting to know the truth doesn't mean that the truth cannot be known. But it takes a little bit of courage. This case, with all the fuss made about it, it's all distraction. The real deal would be to use the power and the leverage that you have. And it's right there in the city council, which is the governing body of the city of New York. It actually funds the police department. So it has the power and authority to call for open hearings. The way Adam Clayton Powell held open hearings, federal hearings, in Harlem, right out there in the street. Precisely at a time that the city council has more representation of African Americans and Latinos, it's the time they have the least power. Or I should say more correctly, the time they have the least interest in power. Four years have gone by, and we're only dealing with this one case. And there is no one creative enough or brave enough to say we're having open hearings. There are questions to be answered here. Why is this killer of Eric Garner earning a pension? Why is he still at work? Why has he not been sanctioned in any way? They don't have that kind of guts. They don't have that kind of dedication to justice. They're terrified. They have to wait for instruction. And apparently they got instruction. The instruction is that this is never to happen. They have the power to call the police commissioner on the carpet. They have the power to fire him. They have the power to fire the mayor. But of course, it's a lot of work to have that kind of power. It takes a lot of guts. And instead, they would actually encourage us all to accept a distorted view, a wrong view, an illegal view about this case involving the murder of a fellow citizen by a bunch of thugs in blue. None of whom have suffered any kind of penalty for behaving this way, for blatantly running against a departmental law that this chokehold maneuver is never to be used. So we have to ask ourselves some questions, because we too are part of the delusion. We talk about Eric Garner case. Look, the family has settled already. And I still say, despite my criticisms, it appears that Gwen Carr, the mother of Eric Garner, is having some second thoughts about whether justice was done. Now, the question remains, where does the case go from here? And who is going to take it forward? Who's going to take on the responsibility of real justice in this case? And we could go on and on for weeks discussing cases just like this. And we just saw the same situation in Sacramento. But that's for another day. I wanted to bring this to your attention to encourage you to resist the ruses that are laid before us in order to distract us from our business of seeking justice. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll connect with each other again tomorrow. Bye-bye.